Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. Breaking news out of Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell confirms that the Fed will start cutting interest rates in September. We'll bring you the headlines, the main takeaways, and then we will get into interest rates, what's going on in money markets, and of course, we will talk about the Bitcoin price and what this means for Bitcoin. All right, so every year, the central bankers from around the world gather at Jackson Hole. The Kansas City Fed hosts a meeting, and it is typical for Jackson Hole to bring large headlines from central bankers, especially as they gear up for a new endeavor of policy. And so in this year's edition, we saw Jerome Powell introduce the reasons for rate cuts and why they will be arriving very soon. Now, some people might remember that over a decade ago, Ben Bernanke, who was the Fed chair at the time, used the Jackson Hole Symposium to launch QE2 and a whole brand of monetary policy, really with this ample reserves regime that they were trying to get into that they formally named some years later. But Jackson Hole is basically an avenue for central bankers, especially the Fed, to introduce what is coming. And so that is what we got today in Wyoming. And we see the headlines. And then we see the headline here from Bloomberg: major central banks now aligned as Powell signals Fed cuts ahead. So Jerome Powell announced formally that the Fed will be cutting rates in September. For the Bitcoin Layer readers, viewers, and listeners, this is not a surprise whatsoever. You guys have known that this is coming for several months. We told you that the Fed would be cutting rates by June toward the end of last year. So definitely a little bit early on the call, but spot on in the direction. And not only were we trying to indicate to you the direction of policy rates, but more importantly, we were trying to show you that the yield curve and the level of U.S. Treasury yields, so the shape of the U.S. Treasury yield curve and the level of those yields themselves, are all the signal we need. People might ask, how did you know the Fed was going to cut rates later this year? It's not that we knew. It's that we understand the market knows. And so I'm going to break down what that means and the signal from the market that we got a little bit later in this video, but this was not an outright prediction. It's us understanding how the market of Treasury yields works, especially the shape of the yield curve and the signal that we get from that shape. So we also learned that the ECB and Bank of England officials also signal lower rates. Now remember that the Bank of England has already cut rates. The European Central Bank has already cut rates. So the Fed, that's why this headline is that Powell joins the rest of the world. And remember what we have explained to you guys on how central banks work with each other. The BIS, which is an international organization located in Switzerland, the BIS is not some all-powerful organization that tells the Fed and the ECB what to do. No, it's actually a club that the Fed has joined and all these other central banks have joined. They come together and decide together what to do. And so this year, earlier this year, we could tell that central bankers were gathering in Basel, getting ready to cut rates across the globe. And how would they implement that across the several central banks? It was clear the Fed would go last, and that's what we're gonna see. The Bitcoin Layer is proud to be sponsored by Unchained, the leader in Bitcoin financial services. Unchained empowers you to take full control of your Bitcoin with collaborative multi-sig vaults where you hold two of three keys and benefit from a Bitcoin security partner. This is a really important feature. You can purchase Bitcoin directly into your cold storage with Unchained's trading desk and completely eliminate your exchange risks. Unchained also offers the best IRA product in the industry. You can convert easily your 401k or IRA into Bitcoin while keeping control of your keys. Don't pay more in taxes than you have to. Go talk to them today. Unchained.com/TBL and make sure you use code TBL for $99 off when you create an account. Imagine losing your Bitcoin fortune to a house fire or to accidental damage. A complete nightmare, right? It's estimated that over 30% of Bitcoin are lost forever, and poor seed phrase security is a big reason why. That is why we use Stampseed, a really cool DIY kit that allows you to stamp your seed into these titanium plates. So let me show you how it works. They send you a titanium plate. Part of the kit comes with this really easy to use tracker. You slide your seed phrase into the tracker. Now you take the letters that they send you, you take a letter out, and you place it into your device, and then you take this incredibly heavy duty titanium hammer, and you hammer your letters into this titanium plate. Your full seed phrase will be stamped into this titanium plate that is fireproof, accident proof, damage proof. These tools have been specifically designed by people working in titanium stamping for over 14 years. So go check them out today, stampseed.com, and make sure you use code TBL for 15% off of your order. Why did the Fed pivot today in Jackson Hole? It's nothing new. This is a labor market that is slowing. The big reaction from the market, meaning yields down today, was really, in my opinion, due to the use of one word. Indeed, Powell gave a full-throated call to support the job market. He cited the recent rise in the unemployment rate to nearly a three-year high of 4.3%, calling the cooling in the labor market unmistakable and adding that central bankers wouldn't welcome any further increases. So, the Fed has a dual mandate, inflation and employment. He is now admitting that the concerning readings of unemployment are unmistakable. What that does is it positions the market for an understanding that rate cuts are coming because one side of the mandate is now unmistakably bad. That's what Powell is trying to say here. So if one side of the equation is unmistakably bad, it means that the direction of policy rates is unmistakably lower. And that is what the communication from Powell today was trying to get us to understand. Now, one final note on the word unmistakable here. What that is also doing is it's bringing in further increases in the unemployment rate. It puts those increases in the direct line of what is the most important data. So here's what I mean by that. Now, a few weeks ago, when we got that huge unemployment miss and a 4.3% reading, it was my understanding and statement outwardly that now the data doesn't actually matter anymore. The times of the data mattering are gone, especially inflation. Now, inflation doesn't really matter anymore, because the other side of the equation, unemployment, has entered the room. And so, and I really do think that that is the case now. The only data that matters is that unemployment rate that comes out on the first Friday of every month. How bad that rate gets will determine how fast the Fed cuts. And the inflation readings and any other readings on the economy, even ISM, which is our favorite, housing data, I don't actually think any of it matters anymore for the next couple months, let's just say. The market is now fixated on what the Fed is fixated on, which is the rising unemployment rate. So that rate going from 4.3 to 4.4, to 4.5, to 4.6 will guarantee rate cuts and the magnitude of rate cuts. Nothing else will matter. Not even mildly higher inflation. None of that will matter. Retail sales, the consumer, default rates, a foreclosure wave possibly coming back into the mix, none of it matters to the Fed because it all is represented in one number, which is the most politically charged number, the unemployment rate. And so the Super Bowl of data every month will be that U3, which is code word for the unemployment rate, third rate in the series, which is the one that's publicized at 4.3%. They have U1, U2, all the way up to U6. U6 is commonly referred to as the underemployment rate. It's people that want a job, but want a full-time job, but can't get a full-time job. So they're part-time employed, including those people. So anyway, U3 is the number that we'll fixate on. The market will also fixate on this. So markets will chop around based off of that early September, first Friday of September reading. Now let's take a look at our first chart of the day. This is global central banks and their policy rates over the last 3 to 4 years. What do we see? We see the stairs up, the plateau in 2023 and 2024, and now the decline. We bring this chart to remind you guys, central banks around the world work as a team. This is not an independent monetary policy regime. This is a global monetary system that often is moved around by the price of money and the price of the dollar. So the dollar's price has a huge impact here. As the dollar rose, it was a danger and it made sure that the Fed was going to cut. So we'll talk about the dollar here shortly. I want to show you one chart on the dollar, but the dollar's price versus the other currencies matters a lot. Therefore, the Fed's interest rate versus the other central bank's interest rate matters a lot. So when the Fed is moving to cut here, it's doing so really as a joint effort with the rest of the central banks. It's also why we reminded you guys that when Europe is cutting, it just means that the Fed is going to cut soon. Now, let's take a break from global FX to talk about the money markets. Now, here's what I was trying to say at the beginning of the video today, is that the market told us that this was going to happen. It wasn't us predicting it. It's just us listening to the market. So before we get into U.S. Treasuries, let's talk about U.S. T-bills, the three-month part of the curve, which falls into our money markets portion of our framework. And so here, looking at the money markets, this three-month T-bill yield is the market telling the Fed where it's going. The T-bill yield leads the Fed higher, and it leads the Fed lower. So you saw the sharp increase in 2023, the sharp increase in 2022, the steadying in 2023, and the flattening and modest decline in 2024. Now T-bill yields are finally heading lower as money markets arbitrageurs are making sure that they lock in their three-month bill yields today before they get cut after the Fed's rate cut on September 18th, another one probably in November, another one in December, and the Fed will keep going. After that, we're going to assign a question mark because we don't know what the data is going to be. It's our estimation that rates are coming down by about 2% on the policy side over the course of the next year plus. And what we are pretty much certain on is that the first 1% of cuts will arrive extremely quickly. Now, I want to give a shout out to a friend of mine who is a real estate agent in the higher end here in Los Angeles. Now, I'm not sure if he's a viewer or listener, but when I was reading his latest letter, it was spot on. It made me believe that he's actually listening to us at TBL, and it is representative of this concept here, which is that the market leads. Now, of course, my friend is trying to make sure that his clients out there know rates are coming down and have come down, so financing conditions are more favorable to buyers, right? So it's his job to sell homes. He wants to make sure buyers are aware that rates are coming down. But he made a very important point, and of course it fits into his sales technique, which is that you should go out and look today. You shouldn't be waiting for the Fed to cut. What he was saying is that, hey, mortgage rates have already come down. Even though you hear in the headlines the Fed is going to cut in September, November, December, the 10-year part of the curve is already trading sub 4%. So a lot of that move is already priced into the 10-year, which is the benchmark for mortgage rates. So the decline in mortgage rates, which we can see and we've showed you guys, are at a 15-month low. The 15-month low in mortgage rates is representative of the market's understanding that the Fed is going to cut. So it's not like overnight home buyers are in a better situation on September 19th than they were on September 17th after the Fed cuts. Rates have actually moved lower across the curve, especially in the longer end, and it's driven mortgage rates lower already. Now, it is our expectation that 10-year yields will continue to decline 3.5% to maybe 3%. That will get mortgage rates lower. We've told you guys to get your refi docs ready. Hopefully, some of you were already able to do that and pull the trigger. But if you wait another few months, you'll probably get an even better opportunity to refi and to take out loans at a lower rate than what they were throughout the entire year of 2023 and 2024. The point here about 3-month bill yields is that the Fed is not the leader. The headlines will say today and tomorrow that the Fed admits cuts are coming. Actually, this is inaccurate. The headline should read, Fed bows down to the market. The Fed is responsive to where yields have gone and the path that yields are showing. The Fed is a lagging indicator. I know we focus a lot on the Fed and what the Fed does, but it's the market that leads the Fed up and down in policy rates. The 2-year yield has been at 4% for months. It has told the Fed that you are too restrictive and rates are going. It says to the Fed, we know you're going to cut. Don't even pretend that you're not going to. We know you're going to. Guess what? Market was right. Fed is going to cut. So it's not that the Fed confirms rate cuts. It confirms that the market was right all along. And so who was listening to the market? We were at the Bitcoin layer. We were listening to the inverted curve telling us that policy rates were too restrictive. And they will continue to be too restrictive after the first rate cut in September, after the second rate cut in November, after the third rate cut in December. You won't see the curve steepen out and actually reflect less restrictive rates until the Fed does something much more drastic than a few baby 25 basis point rate cuts to close out the year. So remember, the financial media and the Fed will probably try to tell you that these are just a few rate cuts to start to just try to see if it can soften the rise in unemployment. It's all bogus. You will see rates be cut by 2% over some time horizon. We will watch U3, the unemployment rate, which is currently at 4.3%, for more signal there. And probably now, with the huge 818,000 job downward revision we got this week from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, yes, that is a real government agency, the government has basically opened the door to a higher unemployment rate from a perception standpoint, even though that unemployment rate was a better reflection of where the job market was than those monthly NFP numbers that were revised down. Now, let's shift gears from money markets to the economy and also get a sense of how we had an idea the economy was slowing and not ready for more rate hikes or even a policy rate that was going to stay at 5.5%. We knew that that wouldn't be the case. Now, instead of looking at 58 economic readings every month, which we also do that, but it's not the best way to get signal. We try to strip away the noise for you guys and give you ISM every month and a full breakdown of what happens in ISM, both manufacturing and services. First business day and third business day of the month, we get these surveys. So it's been a few weeks since we got these August ISM numbers, but I want to remind you, this is how we watch the economy. And I've zoomed out for 10 years, so you can see 16, 17, 18, economy pretty good. ISM's 55 to 60. Then in 2019, the economy started to tank, guys. And so the rate cuts and the all that, it started well before the pandemic. The September 2019 repo crisis was well before the pandemic. Then you see the huge drop-off and the recovery based on stimulus. Then you see the economy slowing in 2022, slowing and flatlining in 2023, and then taking some pretty sizable dips in 2024, especially on the employment sub-indices, both of them below 50. Now, for periods of 2024, ISM services unemployment spiked back above 50 with the latest reading. So this is the signal. And the signal is the economy, not great. And when we get more data from the labor market, we're able to see that, yes, the labor market readings from NFP were not accurate, nearly as accurate as the ISM employment sub-indices. That gave a better reflection of a labor market, not that great. So now the Fed, using one number, U3, 4.3%, for all of its information now, shows you how idiotic the process is of conducting monetary policy looking in the rearview mirror at lagging data. Instead, we shouldn't have a central bank manipulate the price of money. We should be looking at the treasury yield curve for the price of money. Three-month bills pretty much represent that on an ongoing basis anyway. So the Fed is a lagging indicator to where the market is. Now let's talk about U.S. Treasury yields. I have here on the screen two-year yields. We see the false waves of rallies. So the 2023 Silicon Valley, when we thought we were going to get rapid cuts, we didn't due to BTFP and other bailout mechanisms, including, don't forget, unlimited FDIC insurance. That concept will be touched much more in my book, which will be out by the end of the year. The FDIC basically guaranteeing deposits makes the dollar much structurally more prone to bailouts than it ever was before. Then you got the second wave, which was this disinflation wave when we really saw the end of scary CPI. But the Fed still tried to convince people that it might hike rates again. That's that second green arrow. And then finally, the breakdown and the realization that cuts are coming. Going to the next chart, 10-year Treasury yields. We flagged this breakdown earlier in the year at 4.25, 4.33. It was massive, and this is the reason why the uptrend was broken. The downtrend is now with us. The bull market in treasuries is here. And notice that the bull market in treasuries corresponds one-to-one with a slowdown in the economy and the expectation for a slowdown in the economy. There was never a debt bubble in U.S. treasuries. The reason yields were going up was inflation. The reason yields are coming down is disinflation. Okay, one quick chart on the 10-year yield here. I've zoomed out 10 years on the 10-year yield just so you can see that forget these narratives of the sovereign debt bubble, the treasury debt bubble, the great bond bubble bursting. You guys have to understand that there's essentially one driver of treasury yields, and it unfortunately, for the rational analyst, has nothing to do with the quantity of debt that the U.S. government has. You would think, and you would even hope, that rates would represent the huge debt situation that the U.S. government is in, but it just doesn't. Why are yields falling even though the debt is rising and debt to GDP is rising? Why are yields falling? Because inflation is falling. There's nothing else that matters. So really check the narratives that you guys get out there with the doomers on the treasury debt bubble. It's not a treasury debt bubble that's bursting due to $36 trillion in debt. If it was, yields wouldn't be coming down. That day might happen, but it's not today. And it's not with an inverted yield curve. Okay, an inverted yield curve means there's a premium on long-term treasuries. It means you're willing to pay up less yield for longer maturity is a premium. There's a premium on long-term treasuries, not some large treasury bubble discount. And all of this is happening with no QE. This is another thing to remember. It's not the Fed buying that's driving yields lower. It's the economy slowing and inflation slowing. And the life insurance companies and the pension funds from around the world saying 4% for a treasury, I'll take it. No 5% CPI, 4% on treasuries, I'll take it. CPI heading to 2.5%, I'll take it. And that willingness to buy sends yields lower. So if you can point to me on the chart, the sovereign debt bubble, send me a note. All right, let's transition to back to the dollar for a second and think about the treasury issuance more broadly. So this chart kind of fits across a couple of our pieces of our framework, the dollar and treasuries. But I wanted to show you guys here something. I brought this chart up before. It's harder to see the signal. So what I want to do is just walk you through it. The green line is the dollar index. So green line up means dollar stronger versus the euro and the yen and the Chinese yuan. Okay? Remember that dollar up, dollar strength is a dangerous financial condition for the world because as the dollar gets more expensive, debt, dollar debt that's taken out abroad becomes more difficult suddenly to pay back with local revenues. You have to keep buying dollars, extra dollars to pay back the dollar debt. Then the dollar gets stronger. This is the dollar milkshake theory that some of you might be familiar with. Now, a strong dollar is dangerous to the world, and the Fed knows it. And the Fed makes sure that if the dollar gets too strong, it adjusts its rhetoric in some way that eases the dollar. That's the Fed's role. The Treasury also understands that a strong dollar is dangerous because a strong dollar, forgetting the financial system, that's what the Fed cares about. The strong dollar is a jeopardy to the U.S. economy because even though energy might be cheaper for Americans, foreign buyers of American goods are disadvantaged with a strong dollar because U.S. products are more expensive. So the Treasury likes a weak dollar too. So what can the Treasury do when the dollar gets weak? It can borrow more money. And when it borrows money, it's printing dollars. It's printing dollar debt. When the Treasury expands its balance sheet by borrowing more, those dollars end up, those bills that they borrow and issue end up on the asset side of banks' balance sheets, and the deposits expand the system as the Treasury spends that money into existence. Now, if you're interested in the mechanics of the balance sheet and how that is explained, check out our episode from earlier this year on understanding Michael Howe's liquidity theory and understanding the creation of money. So we did a couple money creation and debt creation and how the Treasury creates money videos. Those are important for anybody looking for balance sheet work out there with some T-charts. So for those that aren't interested in getting out their pens and pencils and T-charts, let's move right along back to this chart. When the Treasury issues bills, it looks like it calms the dollar. So let's look at the spike in the dollar in 2020. The dollar went stronger on a global crisis. The Treasury issued a bunch of bills and it calmed the dollar. You see the dollar decline 2020, 2021. Then the dollar started to spike again in 2022. Then we saw the Treasury issue a lot more bills in 2023 and that looked to calm the dollar. Now you see the dollar basically chopping around as T-bill issuance remains steady. What could send it lower? obviously lower rates from the Fed, but higher T-bill issuance from the Treasury. So the Fed and the Treasury both responsible for the price of the dollar as per the market. For the actual Fed's mandate, they claim and they tell you that the dollar is not our responsibility, it's the government, so the Treasury Department. Let's close with Bitcoin and the impact of Fed cuts on Bitcoin. Now, let's go back to our understanding of liquidity. What affects liquidity and what affects risk prices? It's three major things. Number one, the size of the banking system. Number two, the price of collateral, which is interest rates. And number three, the volatility of that collateral, so the move index. And when rates fall like they did today, collateral values across the world increase. And when rates fall today in the way that they did, with the removal of uncertainty, that will lower the move index also, and it will dampen volatility. It will increase the ability for banks to create money based off of the collateral that they already have, and that should be reflected in the price of risk assets. So stocks up and Bitcoin up today in a direct reflection of lower yields and lower bond volatility. Now, what are we maybe in store for Bitcoin going forward and these rate cuts? Definitely more favorable financial conditions with lower rates and higher certainty on the path of interest rates. It's really that uncertainty on the path that creates bond volatility. Bond volatility is suppressed by speeches like Jerome Powell's today. So that is what could possibly be very supportive to liquidity, risk assets, and Bitcoin. What could be a challenge to Bitcoin? It could be a sudden increase in volatility due to maybe a lack of rate cuts or some sort of dislocation in the broader financial market that causes bond volatility to spike even if rates are coming down. And that could happen in some sort of protracted crisis, like what we saw a couple weeks ago with the global stock market rout led by the Japanese equity market declining by 12% in one single day due to a blow up of the carry trade. We're not really sure which fund or which trade blew up, but we saw it in the markets. Yields collapsed, stocks collapsed, including in Japan, then in the United States. All of that price action actually spiked volatility and hit risk assets, including stocks and Bitcoin. That type of event off of a recession trade is completely plausible and possible. So it should be in your range of possibilities and probabilities. But when we think about Bitcoin over the more medium term, we see global financial asset base potentially increasing on a potential end to QE and resumption of some balance sheet expansion from central banks around the world, even though they're telling you that QT is still going. That's another risk for Bitcoin. If QT still goes, that can shrink the size of the system. If the government, the US government, all of a sudden decides that it's not going to be borrowing as much money, that can hit Bitcoin and liquidity as well. So these are the things on both sides of the equation. Now, looking at the Bitcoin candle from today, these are daily candles. Bitcoin with a nice $3,000-$4,000 pop after yields went down. We saw stocks also react in a similar way. But look at the trend lines, both the ascending and descending trend line. Ascending trend line around 51,000. Descending trend line around 69,000 right now. Bitcoin right in the middle of that range. What happens between 60 and 69,000 is not really relevant. What happens near that resistance level is going to give us all the signal that we need. If it gets knocked back down, comes back down to the bottom of the range, there's no real signal there. It just means more chop and more sideways price action until something can actually motivate the buyers to go long. What could be that motivation? A much larger wave of central bank easing than is currently being priced in, which it's already a lot of easing being priced in. But QT and the end of QT and more QE, it's not really priced in yet. So what could send Bitcoin higher? much more easing than we're currently getting. Because remember, the Fed is going to keep telling you that it's not easing yet. It's just removing restriction. Thanks for sticking with us today at the Bitcoin Layer. Please like this video, subscribe to the channel, rate and review on your audio platforms as well. That helps us out a lot. And don't forget to subscribe to our free research letter at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe. We'll catch you guys next time.